Most weight loss programs are short-term fixes, but managing your weight needs a long-term solution. And that's what makes Noom different. Noom uses science and personalization to help you manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps you build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com to sign up for your trial today.
All right, everybody, before we get started with this episode of Benched with Bubba, if you love the strategy of season-long fantasy sports and live for the short-term gratifications of DFS, then you have to try out Weekly Fantasy Sports WFS on Owner's Box. Head on over to rotoballer.com/box and sign up today. Weekly Fantasy Sports is the best of daily and season-long. It keeps you engaged through live drafting and new multi-week games. Owner's Box will also be paying out users who bring their friends on board. Watch the real money rewards pile up through their first ever three-tiered referral system. Add friends, create groups, and rank up to elevate the trash talk and competition to the next level. But that's not it. Owner's Box will be matching your first-time deposit of up to $500 for any depositors through January 4th. Just head on over to www.rotoballer.com/box and sign up today to claim your $500 bonus and join the new wave of weekly fantasy sports. Now, to this episode of Benched with Bubba. Back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 331. We are here on New Year's Eve. So most of you probably listen to this 2021. Hopefully it's a better time for y'all. That'd be great. But if you, before we get into the brass tacks of all this, you can follow me on Twitter at BDEntrick. Give a rate and review to the podcast. It'd be much appreciated. And that'll be the last of my sales pitches today because I have a great guest lined up for us. We're going to do some New Year's resolutions, talk some occasional hot stove information going on, and we're going to talk about value. And I value this guy's opinion. You can find him on Twitter at Deadpool Hitter. He has the Deadpool Hitter podcast. Mr. Rob DiPietro, how we doing, man?
I'm doing wonderful, Bubba. I really appreciate you having me out here today. You know, it's pretty wild feeling. You know, last year about this time, I started the whole like getting into deep, heavy podcast listening, and you know, had a vision for what I wanted to mine to sound like, and I just started listening to everything, and yours instantly became like one of the go tos, and it's so wild that I'm here talking to you, so it's pretty cool, you know. It's full circle, but it's awesome, you know. I appreciate all you do, man. You're grinding out there every day. It's awesome. It's great to see. It's big motivation for everybody.
Well, I appreciate it. And I want to apologize. It's the Pull Hitter podcast. I always call it Deadpool Hitter in my head because you're the Deadpool Hitter. It's the Pull Hitter podcast if you're looking for it on iTunes. I've done it many times. So it's the Pull Hitter podcast. Right. And I should get it right because I've been lucky enough to be on the show with my other co-host, Toby, about Crazy. And that was a fun one talking about different stuff there and really getting into the kind of how do we look at 2020 and going into 2021 conversations like that. So that was great. Yeah, you've been doing the podcast game. I remember it was probably a little less than a year ago, pretty close to it, though, when you were asking me, like, what kind of microphones. You're asking other guys, too, not just me, but you're asking questions, getting all into it. So it's good to see. But the thing that's fun is, did you have the vision to do this before you're the $30,000 man or after the $30,000 man?
Oh, it was before. It was before. You know, I had a had a pretty horrible end to 2019. It was worse than 2020. So I had a pretty just terrible time and, you know, just pivoted, just like really focused, laser focused on this stuff and getting it out there. And, you know, it just ended up great. Like how it ended up like me winning. And I just started this, journey ended up, you know, it was a lot easier for me, I guess, to link up with the big hitters, you know.
It helps. But, it does help.
It definitely helped. I'm definitely grateful about that. But, you know, everyone's awesome. You know, what a great community that we're involved with. Yeah, and I remember to ask you about the microphones and every little technical thing, you know, watching PitchCon, just learned so much. Everyone was so helpful. No one ever had a bad thing to say or like didn't respond. You know, it was really awesome to see that.
Yes, the beauty of the community. It's I've always told anybody that is new to it, just my DMs are always open for one, and B is never be scared to ask anybody. Like the community, no matter how big the person you think is, they're pretty receptive to talking. So that's one go-to thing I would say. But I have more to ask you, but I'm going to save that for more of our resolution section.
Cool.
It kind of lines into to there, I think, about kind of your future for this year and whatnot based on last year. But so we'll go there for that. Let's jump into some recent news. The Padres have been busy, very busy. AJ Preller must have had a heck of a Santa Claus gift come under the tree and decided we're going to spend all our money, or at least most of our prospects, on some new toys this year. And we'll start with Blake Snell coming over from the Padres. I'm not going to worry too much. Like, we got Patino and stuff. That could be an interesting situation, but there's a lot of question marks there. Blake Snell coming from Tampa Bay to San Diego. Everyone's talking about more innings. That's like the go-to conversation, but I think there's a lot more to it. What's your take on Snell coming to San Diego, and how does that affect his fantasy value for you?
Well, you know, Snell, it's funny because I think he's like one of those types of pitchers where if you're going into a draft and you like to get maybe like three out of your top five picks, I think he's like a perfect three, but also an acceptable two. When I say perfect three, I think it's like if you can hit on like some good pocket aces and then have the best of Snell, I think you're on your way to like a main event type of win. I think the move to the park is kind of like lateral. But I think if we get the geographical kind of effect that we had last year, he might benefit a little from, you know, facing weaker West team versus, I think, the teams that he faced in the AL and NL East. We hear the term risk with him, and yes, it is risky. Definitely going to acknowledge there's a risk there, but I think the injury label is a tad over-exaggerated. I think, 2018, he missed 12 days. It was his Cy Young year. He came back firing. Didn't bother him until a full year after that. He had that fractured toe. That's not a baseball injury. So he goes on the IL for the loose bodies, misses a bunch of games, end of the season, gets the cortisone shot. And then even with the start-stop type of year, was able to, you know, power through. And what really impressed me is actually I just pulled this up 2 days ago and I watched it, was the infamous game 6 that he got pulled. And I did a little diving because I think a lot of the attention is to whether he should have got pulled or not, but we forget like what he did during the game. He had a 21.9% swing and strike rate. It was the second highest for him in 2020 and the only pitcher to have over 20% versus the Dodgers in 2020. So it wasn't an easy thing to do versus the Dodgers. What I also found pretty crazy was that the Dodgers swung at 15 of Snell's fastballs and came up empty on 8. And there was only one other pitcher during the regular season and postseason who got that similar type of whiff rate on fastballs. He also had a crazy 40% CSW in that game. It was in the top 2% of all starts all year long. And for reference, for context, Giolito's no-hitter was 47 CSW. So the boy had his stuff, Bubba. That's what, I don't know. I went back. I saw he was reaching 97.4. I know the 0.8 mile per hour dip that he saw in his velos in 2018, but he was in the World Series throwing gas and he wanted to pitch. And I don't know. When I see that, and in that whole context, I look at it a little differently. And maybe he can give you a similar type season. And even if he doesn't accumulate a ton of innings, I still like what he can do in 170, 160, you know, better than most. I put it that way.
Yeah, no, it's a really fun debate because I know when the game 6 took place, many people had different opinions on it. Like, it's the Rays way. So we stuck with the Rays way. But, you know, it's game 6. He's gassed up, like you said. You kind of roll with what got you there. There's just so many different arguments to be made there. And I agree, he was dealing. There's no arguments there. I mentioned on a recent show that Blake Snell's press conference when the Padres introduced him, he mentioned a few times that he was looking forward to being on a new team that lets pitchers go past the sixth, and he wants to show people what he can do. And so he had little jabs going back to Tampa Bay. Yeah. So there's a little chip on the shoulder, and you can tell Blake's got that. And sometimes that's a great thing to have. Sometimes you can get pitchers throwing too hard, and it adds up being something bad. So that's why he's just such a conundrum about – it's like you said, he's a great number three if you get the elite number three, because he is just a couple of years removed from the AL Cy Young. So we know how good he is. Like, he is that good of a pitcher. So it's tricky with him. When he's with Tampa, I really didn't want to draft him at all, because I believe that Tampa does their thing, and they weren't going to change. Like, they're just not going to. But now in San Diego, it's a lot more interesting. We'll talk about Darvish in a minute. So you have those two guys as your aces. There's injury concerns with Lamet. Paddock's been kind of wishy-washy. The rest of that rotation's kind of tough, where they need Darvish and Snell to kind of lead the way and save the bullpen from time to time.
Right.
So, like you're saying, you could see Snell going there. So I guess the question comes down to, if you're looking at, for the reference of the whole podcast, Draft Champions ADP, December 1st till today, the 31st. So what we're kind of be looking at. And you got Snell's the 17th pitcher off the board at pick 52. Right before him, you got Maeda and Glass now. Right after him, you have the infamous, famous Corbin Burnes. And then Zach Plesac, who I know your thoughts on that, so he won't even be in the conversation here. But like between Glasnow, Maeda, Snell, Burnes, does Snell still stand out as the top guy kind of in this range of starting pitchers?
He is. For me, he is, yes. Yeah, okay. I'll take the steadiness of Zach Gallen, but I just think the upside would be better with Snell. And I think if I'm taking Snell, like I said, it would probably be as a two or a three. And I try to want to, you know, be a little more of a home run pick there rather than steady Eddie Gallen.
Yeah, so, I'm with you. Yeah. I'm curious to see how his ADP keeps changing now that he is in San Diego, because his high in the month's been 41, so maybe he's been kind of creeping up the last couple drafts since the move's taken place. I guess we'll have to wait and see, because I think there's a lot of validity to the conversation that he's going to throw more innings. And obviously, more counting stats, maybe I think we can probably agree a better offense behind him that might help win more games. Like,
a lot
of interesting factors there. So Snell's a fun one. And then I mentioned a second ago, Yu Darvish gets traded from San Diego along with his personal catcher, Victor Caratini. Caratini's fun in deep, deep leagues. He's just going to catch one day every five. Like, he might fill in at first base and DH if that comes back. So he's kind of a tough one to evaluate at this point in time. But you got Darvish coming off and a runner-up Cy Young season, outstanding. About the second half of 2019 where he was elite. He seems to have figured it out right now with the pitch mix change and the metrics. Coming over to San Diego, what's your fantasy take there? Because right now he's the fifth guy off the board, which is pretty high already. It's going to be hard to kind of jump the next group.
Pretty up there, you know. I think this all comes down to your views on, like, the ageist, your view on pitchers up there in age and how you mitigate risk. You know, if you think he's planted the flag and that he's a brand new control pitcher, which it looks like he is, I think you can be comfortable taking him. I won't take him where he's going, but I certainly wouldn't fault anyone for doing so.
Yeah, that's my biggest thing, because I think the transition from Chicago to San Diego, fantasy wise, you're going to see a pretty similar pitcher.
Right.
You can't really get much higher than what he was doing. He might have a little regression, but I still think he's going to be pretty darn good. The hard part will be. Yeah, he's a high pick. There's a guy you mentioned in the resolution, so I won't bring him up now, but I'm 100% with you. I want that guy probably over Darvish. I talked about him on the SP1 preview with Toby the other day.
Mm-hmm.
I legit think he's got the potential to take that next jump. So we'll get to him later.
Yeah. That's the guy who I would take there too over him. So
And so that's a tease, listeners, to keep listening.
A little tease.
But it's just hard to take Darvish, who I love, but I loved him last year when he was like in round three. It was so much more.
I know. And it's just one of those things where every time I look at it and I question myself, you know, constantly ask myself, should I be more in, you know, should you, you know, and it's just tough. It's still only 20, like a second half of 2019 into a short season 2020. And, you know, it's an impressive run. Don't get me wrong, but it still doesn't. For me versus his whole career. And he's up there in age, but, yeah, like I said, I don't fault anyone for taking him, because I could totally see him, you know, being the number four pitcher this year.
Yeah, it's about a 25 start stretch. So it's not like it's a good sample, but not a great sample. So that's the tricky part there. Last thing we'll talk about for the Padres for now is they're still rumored to be doing more stuff. But for now, they made a splash in the foreign market. There is an elite middle infield, probably going to play second base for the Padres, but played shortstop in the KBO. Ha Sung Kim came over, signed with the Padres, about $6 to $7 million a year. That's not important here. What's important is this guy has power and speeds, depth charts projection, 244 average, 22 homers, 8 stolen bases. I know Jeff Erickson on RotoWire, he tweeted out the other day about a low 20s, like mid-teen stolen base guy, like a 270-ish average, because he hit around 300 for most of the last 4 years in the KBO with about 20-plus homers and 16 or more stolen bases. Like his 3 main years, he dominated. So it looks like a very, very good ball player, and he's still young. What does this do for you in the grand scheme of things? He's going to be shortstop eligible in the NFBC. He's like the 17th shortstop off the board. But obviously, when you're drafting sometime in the season, he becomes second base eligible. What's your whole take on Kim?
Man, it's funny, too, because when we were doing the best ball draft, you know, and I was like, I think I was looking for him. I forget what, because there were like 3 drafts going on. And I don't, praise to Derek and Brian Seymour. I don't know how they do 10 at a time or however much. Yeah, that's because I was like, what league do I have this guy in? Like, but, you know, it's a pretty interesting profile. So I went to just try to watch some video because I didn't see too much of it. And he had a pretty interesting swing. It looks like it could translate to some power. I don't know how much power, but he got some thunder in his bat, you know, and he walked more than he struck out. So you don't know how that's going to translate, but that's still a good thing to see. And he doesn't seem to be sacrificing any hard contact, you know, to not strike out. And he's averaging a good 20-ish, 21 homers a season. So, I don't know, on video, it looks good from what the scouts say. It looks good. You know, what, 12 to 15 homers, maybe 15 stolen bases. There's not too many guys who do that as is. So there's, you know, there's a lot of possibility. There's a lot of potential there for some profit. So, whether I would take him where he's going, that's another, you know, it's funny because I see Paul DeJong next to him. And I think one of the guys from Fangraphs had his power upside listed as a Paul DeJong type. So whether, you know, when we see that, it's interesting that they're next to each other. I don't know. That's a tough pick to invest so much in that market, the foreign market. I'm more risk averse to not do it in like a draft champions league. But I don't know. What do you think about him? What have you seen?
It's tough because, you know, when the pandemic first started, I was watching some of the KBO stuff. I didn't watch it as religiously as it kept going on, but he was one of the names that I was told to pay attention to. So I'd watch him a bit, and I like the talent. There is some pop, some speed. I like the ability. One of the things I focus on in drafts I've talked about is I want to try to get guys that contribute in all 5 categories. They might not be elite in all 5, but they're contributing. And that's what Kim will do. So I like him. Roster Resource has him predicted to hit 7th, which is kind of troublesome if you like go back to the whole Jeff Zimmerman's chart of where you hit in the order and how many at bats, so on as the season goes on. It adds up in a hurry, bat and 7. So that's something to keep in mind. Maybe that changes throughout the season. Maybe, who knows? But for now, 7th. I like it. I like it a lot. It's hard to take him at pick 172 because you had a key part there is the unknown of the foreign players. We've seen time and time again, Rob, that these studs from overseas come and it takes some time to figure it out, or they just don't figure it out. Because as goofy as, you know, the Major League Baseball is because it's so watered down with so many teams at times, it's still elite compared to any other league you go to.
Right.
And I interviewed Dan Kurtz, my KBO, way back in the pandemic before the KBO started. And I said, where would you compare, or how would you compare the MLB to KBO? And KBO, he was saying, I believe, was like in between AA and AAA.
Interesting.
So this is like basically promoting, let's say, a guy that in the in-between seasons of AA and AAA, so let's say a AAA player. I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. AAA player, promoting to the bigs, and now you're saying, okay, this is my stud starting shortstop.
Interesting.
Like, that doesn't happen every day. Right. So it's
good way to put it. Way to put it into perspective. I like that, yeah.
So it's one of those, and there's one thing, because like I'm very risk averse when I draft, and that can be a detriment to me, but I don't play a lot of overalls. Like if you're in overalls, you take some risk. I get it. But I'm more of like, I'm in a standard league and I want to win this league. And so I'm more risk averse. It's one of those, I got to see it. Hey, if you dominate, I'll take you as a top 10 shortstop next year. Right. Like, I'll pay that price. But, you know, like you mentioned, Paul DeJong, I love Paul DeJong. He's boring. People hate him. But what he low average, like 250-ish average, drops bombs. Like, it hits in the middle of a batting order. I love that kind of profile. Jorge Polanco's right there leading off for a good Twins lineup. You got talent there. It's just kind of how your team fills out. But
Yeah, that's the thing, right? If you want to go, if you need a home run pick, like, hey, let me go swing for the fences. I built this solid, you know, team of just, you know, at-bats all across the board, no risk, boom. You know, maybe you do it. You know, I think in that circumstance, I could see myself even doing it, but I don't see my, you know, I probably not. But you know what? I have, I just took over a team in a dynasty league that Toby's in as well. And yeah, and I have the 1-2 and the 1-6. And, you know, I'm hoping that I can get him in that ring, like, you know, with the 1-6. And in a dynasty type format, I think, because maybe he's, you know, a little bit more ready to contribute than your standard prospect that comes up. Yeah. Or I might just be able to flip him for, you know, for someone who's really into him, and which I realize the dynasty, you know, leagues are biggie, really heavy on the name value. You know, you get a lot for name value.
Well, yeah, he's a shiny new toy. Like, right. you can get a lot from him, especially if you're on a rebuilding dynasty. That's a great point right here. If you're on a rebuilding dynasty team and you have an early pick, you can go grab him and then flip him for like 3 or 4 pieces you can use now.
Right.
Like, that's a great point you just made there that I don't think a lot of people talk about, because I don't do a lot of dynasty talk on here. I do have like 3 dynasty teams. I love the idea of it. I'm just not a prospect guru, so I try not to get too deep in the weeds of the situation. There's tons of great guys that do that. A lot better than me.
Tons. So, and I just learn from them. You know, I just go to the site and I learn. And the one thing they preach is just to watch the video and, you know, try to get a sense of. And sometimes, you know, in our day, we don't want to just sit down and watch some prospects play baseball. But I try to throw it on in the background and be a little more aware of those things. Yeah.
100%. And the last thing I'll mention on Kim, because he's a fun discussion, and I'm pretty sure I'll be talking about him a lot more as we get more videos and news and all kinds of cool stuff, is the other reason I think he's going high and everyone's excited is there's a lot of prospect guys that are excited about him. So right. It's one of those things, like you and I, who kind of focus more on the bigs, we kind of are narrow-sighted on what we want to see. So then you see these guys that we just talked about that are awesome at what they do, they get excited, and so then you have a group of guys going, well, this guy said he's going to be awesome. I got to go take this guy.
Yeah. Industry so, bias. Yeah.
So it gets kind of fun there. And, hey, sometimes you're right. Sometimes you're wrong. I'll be okay being wrong this time if that's the case.
Then we got a whole bunch of guys affecting the ADP market out there.
Yeah. And I guess for guys like us that probably won't be drafting them. Thank you.
Yeah.
All right. Let's go to the Philadelphia Phillies. I just came out with my relief pitcher rankings, and somehow out of all the positions I've released, this is the last one. I've done them all. This was my most controversial one. Apparently people are up in arms about my relief pitcher rankings. I think it's funny because I prefaced it saying this thing's a wasteland. There's gonna be so many moving parts because there's so many unsigned guys. A lot of teams are still looking for guys, so on and so forth. So just kind of be patient with it. Well, people either can't read or they just don't care. One of the two. But Jose Alvarado is a guy I'm a huge fan of. I'm a big fan of Jose Alvarado, what he did with the Rays a couple years ago. Then he had some family issues that weren't totally documented until after the fact. He was decent when he came back last year. He gets flipped to the Phillies, who had Hector Neris last year, which is a roller coaster ride. So now you got Alvarado there that people think will jump Neris, but for now, Neris still is on roster resource as the closer. What are you doing with Jose Alvarado come draft time? Because when you look at NFBC ADP, you got Jose, I'm not even on pitchers, so that would probably help right there. But I was still looking at shortstops. Thanks, Kim. So you got Jose Alvarado. He's going to pick 666, undrafted, unless you're in a super deep league. So what are you doing with him?
Oh, my God. Like, in that context, you know, you would say I'll probably take a stab at him. Although I do think, you know, like you mentioned, roster resource still has Neris above him. I still think that's the case. I still think he's going to get more of the save opportunities. You know, Alvarado, that's just a good old-fashioned case of, you know, the save speculation. What's crazy, right, is that great 2018 he had, it was only 39 innings to go. That's it. It was, you know, it was so far in years, but it was so close in innings. But there's a couple things I don't like about his profile. His ground ball rate has just, you know, plummeted from 55 to 48 to 42. It's going in the wrong direction. He's not getting much like swinging strike wise. The biggest thing that caught my eye was how much problems he's having getting righties out. And to a point where, you know, you just almost have to be lefty on lefty. You see, I looked at some StatCast zone charts, and like righties were handling his pitches down and away a lot better. Like, so they were swinging more and whiffing a ton less and having better wOBA on it. So, and he's just too high for me when I like, for walk rate. He's just too high when I like to spec on a reliever. I'm more of a low, you know, I try to get the low whip spec when I do for a reliever. And I just think that the, I hope so. For I mean, I'm a Met fan, but I hope as a Philly fan that they're going to add more bullpen arms to this, because it's still disgusting, right? I mean, we talked about roster resource, and you keep looking, and you're like, wow, they better add some more arms. So I think that's too. That's still up there, but I don't know. I used to like the profile on the Rays when, you know, and he had the ability to come in and get some saves chances. I think he still might get them, but I don't know if he's as effective as he was. But again, like I said, it was only 39 innings ago where he was really good. So maybe he can flip it around, you know?
Yeah, you can flip it around. Depending on the size of your league, he's still going to get you the ratios because you're going to get some good opportunities there. The strikeouts will be there, but it just might be more situational, like you're saying. And maybe that's good for Neris too, because Neris, right, we've seen him be great, but also have some issues. So it could be one of those, like we're seeing in a lot more teams these days. It's like footballs and running backs. Committees, man. It's just the way it's going to go. This one can be short and sweet. I just wanted to get your thoughts on Gregory Polanco. He's got a fractured wrist. It seems like every offseason it's, okay, Gregory Polanco comeback season. I've heard this story over and over again. I can't do it. There's people I really respect that keep giving me arguments for it. I can't do it. Now he's got a fractured wrist that might help everybody not do it. Were you a Gregory Polanco comeback guy, or are you just kind of like me and you're over it?
I wasn't the comeback guy, but I wasn't out of the range he was going at when it was like my first DC, I think, in the beginning of November. It was, 410-ish, and I was like, okay, maybe. But I hadn't really dug into him as deep as I have done recently, and now, especially with the injury, I'm not, even though I'm, you know, a lot of people have said that he should be back for spring training. I went to Derek Rose's injury timeline tool, and it just was like,
not good.
Everything, the hamstring, the quad, the pinky, the forearm, the wrist, the ear, like it was just, come on, like, you know, what's going on with you? But, you know, it was crazy because he had the COVID, he had the bruised ribs, and then he's, you know, his StatCast stuff was pretty crazy in September, you know, you're striking out nearly 40% of the time. You know, his whiff rate in like every part of the zone is disgusting. Even like middle, he's bad. You know, 42 WRC plus. Yeah, I just think he'll have trouble staying on the field in general. You know, his WAR is very low, so I just think as an overall player, he might not be seeing. And I forget his contract situation. I'm thinking that he's I forget. I just read it, but I forget it. But yeah, I don't know. I don't think so. I was giving it a shot before the injury. Now, definitely no.
It's tough. He's out of options. I believe. Oh, he's got club options 2023, and he's not expensive.
Right.
So he's pretty cheap. But yeah, it's just tough. Like, he can't stay healthy. Plus that the offense around him isn't great because Josh Bell's gone now, and you know, it's just. It's a mess of things. Texas Rangers, they signed Kohei Arihara, from the Japanese League. And he's been one of their better pitchers in Japan. This last year, ERA 3.46, previous 2 years below 2.5. He's an innings eater. He does a little bit of everything. So what's your I'm not saying you're running out to draft him, but now it's a Rangers team that's not great, but he's going to be pitching their second or third in this rotation. He's going to eat innings. Any interest in a guy like Arihara?
It was funny because I think the one thing that caught my eye was that he, you know, he threw nearly 50 more innings than Lance Lynn last year. So, you know, we think of, you know, and that, you know, maybe that's why they brought over a guy like that at that price, just because he might be, you know, a little bit more stretched out to go than what they have in the major league level. You know, it seems like he has one of those repertoires where it's a bunch of pitches and none of them stand out. They're all pretty good, but he got tons of ways to go, you know, five or six pitches and, you know, relying on the change of pace and relying on location rather than that raw stuff. And I just think I saw some an article on Fangraph that just showed the difference in the seam of the balls and the tackiness. Mm-hmm. They said it differed a ton from the MLB, and that's where the pitchers from there tend to struggle with the spin of the. But they did say, though, that they preferred that the pitchers had their out pitch be like a sinker or a changeup, which his pitcher seemed to be. So, I don't know. This is one of those guys where, yeah, it just comes to your, I think your level of risk. Like, where would, you know, are you going to go this route, or are you going to take a shot at, you know, a guy who's 22, may have an upside year? It seems like he might be able to give you some solid innings, though, you know?
Especially at pick 44 right now. Obviously, that's going to come up a little bit, but I don't see it coming up a ton because I thought that last year with like a Josh Lindblom or whatever with the hype, and he still kind of stayed down in the weeds for draft season. So, you know, I mentioned all that stuff I mentioned about Kim. When it comes to these pitchers that, you know, we see the innings and the price, the draft cost, completely different. I'm much more intrigued to take, you know, Arihara as like my 11th pitcher that if he has a couple bad starts, I can just drop him instead of a guy like Kim where you have to play him. So I'm intrigued with Arihara. I think I could be buying in there just a little bit. Because we've also seen in Texas, Minor, Lynn, all these guys, they make it work.
Right.
And so I'm very intrigued with that.
Right.
All right, just mentioned Josh Bell a second ago. He gets traded to the Washington Nationals, which was quite the interesting move, to say the least. I know they've been looking to shop Josh Bell. They finally did it, and then the Nationals were in need of some help because just a couple years removed from World Series, the lineup was not looking great outside of Trey Turner and Juan Soto for the most part. Bell's supposed to hit cleanup. We know we had that big first half of 2019. It's kind of been doom and gloom since then. Do you think the change of scenery is going to help? When you look at ADP-wise, he's going around pick 188, the 20th first baseman off the board. Super cheap. Any interest in Josh Bell?
I don't because the biggest part of my reason is that he just isn't in that range of first baseman that I'm going for, like where he is. I like to go to like, I think I'm up to like 120 with Goldie, and then I'm back in at like 238 with Rowdy. And I think anything in the middle, I've never liked him. When I get my bad buckets, my Chandler bad buckets, he's never like in an asset area that I focus on, or that like a targetable bucket that I'm looking at. Yeah, and you mentioned that, you know, that one great start to the 2019, and I just took a look at like his rolling graphs and his, you know, hills and valleys, wild swings and Woba and those swing, and yeah, this is not a guy I really look to draft.
Yeah, it's really, really tough. I've seen guys try to make the argument for him, and like you mentioned, the guys I'd rather take chances on. Even I'm a guy that would rather take
Christian
a chance
Walker on. Guy. I was just gonna say as soon as I looked up and saw it, I knew you were gonna say that. Yeah,
I would take a chance on him, and I'd even take a chance on Rhys Hoskins before Josh Bell.
100%.
I agree. They're drafted right next to each other. I think there's something to intrigue me with Hoskins, because the one thing, and I'm not going to make this a Rhys Hoskins podcast, but the more I keep looking into him for, like, I had to do the first base and third base for the Black Book, so I had to look a little deeper at the corner positions. And Rhys intrigues me because he gets a lot of hate, and I get it because he had that monster year a couple years back, and people expected that. But you look at, like, his really good years also outside of, like, the last two or so. He's still at 255. Like, everything he did last year, he's done, like, in his good years, people just expect so much more from him. So right. Now you're not paying a premium like you were. He slides right in for me now. Like, it makes sense.
So. I've always liked it, like, because I've known what I was going to get from him. You know, I'm never thinking anything more. Last year, my DC team, he started off terrible, but he went on a run. Luckily I had some depth to bench him, and he went on a run, you know, I think like 10, 11 homers where he just, you know, and he it was the same week that my team took a huge leap in the standings, and he was a big part of it. And, you know, so that should, you know, I have a little special love for Rhys over there too. So, yeah, I agree.
Like, he's one of those guys, and there's a bunch of them as you do your research, and you obviously do. He's one of those guys that you kind of have a floor you can expect, but a really nice ceiling if things click. Where, like, Josh Bell's floor, I really don't know where it ends right now. it gets scary. So it's just one of those things when I'm drafting and you want to figure all that out.
And you're right. I find peace in the consistency of, 240 and 35. Like, you know, if I know that's what I'm going to get and where I need to get him on my roster, and that's he's consistently there. So instead of the roller coaster of a guy like Bell. Yep.
100%. A couple other quickers here. Tigers, we've seen them do this time and time again, sign veteran pitchers. They signed Jose Urania, who when he pitches is interesting. Like, he kind of like sucks you in a little bit, at least in streaming options. Long term can be wishy-washy, but we saw some decent stuff towards the end in Miami. Then he just kind of got hurt and whatnot. I know Toby really likes him. Like, he's done deep dives into him. Do you have any interest in Urania, who's going late in drafts right now?
Well, I mean, I don't. And I really didn't do a deep dive because I saw the K minus walk rate at 2% and I stopped.
Yeah, that's not ideal.
I would love to hear what Toby has to say on it, because obviously I respect that a ton. So, but I stopped there. He never drew me in at all. So I don't know. It's just one of those guys where, you know, and I guess this is maybe a little bit of a fault, right? When you just like, boom, you're like, I'm not going to look at that guy at all because I know I don't like him. And sometimes you don't do as deep of the dive maybe you have to. So maybe I am missing something, but I don't know. I stopped right there.
No, you're not. It's not a bad one to miss something on. I'll let Toby explain it on the SP2 preview we do next week. Just because it's more the pitch mix that he's okay. A fan.
Right, and that's what I don't know. So, boom.
Yeah, that'll be great. I'll have him go into that. And then the last one we have here, another Toby favorite, Hansel Robles, who was once a really elite closer for the Angels. Then the velocity kind of decreased. Got it back towards the end of last season, shortened season. Free agent. Signs with the Twins. The Twins team that bullpen was in flux last year as well. You never know. Maybe he slides into a save here or there. They still have Rodgers in town. Any interest in a guy like Hansel Robles?
I don't. Again, I still think Rodgers is the guy. I think Duffy's better. It's just one of those profiles I look at, and you know, you see like your multiple choice test in school, like which one of these don't fit. You know, in 2019, skills wise, metric wise, doesn't fit. You know, everything else looks the same, and that season doesn't look the same. So, I will bank on the majority of his season showing those skills, and you know, just stay away from him this year.
One more thing I want to ask you. I should have asked you during the Kim conversation, but I want to ask you before we wrap all this up. With the Padres signing Kim, Jake Cronenworth now moves to the outfield or super utility or all kinds of, his playing time's in flux now. Man. So a guy that was very hyped up after a nice 2020 season, he has multi-position eligibility. What are you doing come draft season with a guy like Jake Cronenworth now?
I think, you know, if you still like the skill set, I don't think you should be hesitant to roster it. You know, I still, you know, the whole cream rises to the top situation, you know, like if you like him, I wouldn't say to take a step back on him. Like we're discussing about Kim, maybe he's not as good as we think he is. So maybe he just falls right back into full time. And he just got that super utility. And I think it'll find its way onto the field.
He reminds me of the modern day Ben Zobrist now. So just embrace it and run.
Like, and the next guy is Zach McKinstry on the Dodgers.
There you go. God, more Dodgers. They just keep doing it. they just torment me. All right. Value. This is a fun one because when I saw your tweet, I was like, I'm going to talk to Rob on my podcast anyway, so I'm not going to respond to the tweet because things can get so lost in you know, 240 characters in a conversation. That's one reason I love podcasts, because we can actually talk about things and we can kind of understand each other that you can't understand in a tweet. Plus other people get involved and it gets just a million different directions. So I know I use the word value a lot.
Yeah.
And so I'm curious, can you first let everybody know what your tweet was? And then what's kind of the basis or crux behind your value comments?
Well, and I use it a lot too. I'm guilty of it, you know, and that's just I'm trying to be a little more conscious of it. The thing is, I know what everyone means. That's the thing, right? We all know what we mean when we say it, and I get it. I totally get it. I'm not trying to fight anyone on this. It was that I read it. Like, the first time I read about it was Todd Zola in RotoWire, you know, and he was talking about his whole valuation system, and he gets way into depth of, you know, the valuations and more than I can even explain or try to. So, but he it was just all about saying that, you know, it's all about the mindsets, right? You know, it's just all about how the way we're using the word. So he, like, he proposed potential, you know, I just think like people use it too freely, like, and to some most contexts, like they're using it wrong, you know, like we really don't know the value these players have for us until they provide the stats, you know, and that's at the year end. You know, that's their actual worth to your team is when you evaluate their production versus where you drafted them. And, you know, the biggest comeback that I get that I like is, you know, oh, I use it when I mean I got Devers at pick 50. So compared to Machado at 20, quote unquote, I got good value, right? Mm-hmm. But you're basically now just so assuming that you know what both of those end line stats will be, you know? So now you're predicting two, you know, certain, you know, stat lines. And then you can even, you know, then you get more guys lumped in, right? So compared to where Machado, Arenado, and Bregman went, where I got Davis, I got good value, you know? So now you're assuming, you know, four sets of stat lines. It's, I don't know. So that's what I mean. You know, that's what, cause to me, that's what value is, you know? Like, I don't know. If you were like in the market for a TV and you did your research and you read all the, you know, all the reviews, 900,000 reviews, Amazon, wherever you can find them. And you know, you had a price range, you narrowed it down, you go get one, right? And because it was like the best acquisition cost for your budget in terms of like the price point, the reviews and all the LTVs you're looking at. And then in 4 months, like the pitcher sucks, right? Mm-hmm. What is, did you get good value? Right? Like maybe when you bought it, you're like, oh, there's the great value, you know, but it's just a different, like, it should just be a different term. Like, I believe I made a, you know, a good cost, like acquisition cost for this TV because it didn't get you good value. Like, and so I don't know, maybe that's a bad analogy. I just feel it should just be more, you know, just a little more focus on how we use it and not so freely, I guess.
No, it makes a ton of sense. Cause I know that's when I use it a lot is, when we're comparing, you know, this player to this player, it brings value because I guess, and you say, you know why we're doing it because in your head you're saying, okay, this guy should produce blah, 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 blah. So compared to this guy who produces similar output, I'm getting value.
Right.
So that's what we're doing there. But you're correct because we really don't know if that's value. It's perceived, as you mentioned. So my question is, so we're on the same page here. And my question is, what should we call it? When we're doing analysis for a draft season and we're comparing players, is it the cost benefit? Because then people get mad that we're talking about the price of someone because they're individual and we shouldn't talk about their price. So that's why I want to have the conversation. What should we call it that makes sense that actually is what it is, if that makes sense as well?
Right, and then I was like thinking about perceived value, right? But then that's another sensitive thing because then you're then you're casting like a perceived, you know,
judgment. Actually works.
Nothing worked, Bubba. This I've been thinking about it, and I, you know, like I said, I think Todd Zola said potential, the one you threw out. I've been thinking, and like everything is sensitive or, you know, I don't know. I think maybe we should like all just like do like a real big analyst dive, you know, like brainstorm, get together on a Zoom and figure this all out.
All the proper terminology.
Right. You know, because you just want to be able to say like, I think for where I got Devers compared to the other guys by the end of the year, cause you know, you don't want to say all that. That's the thing. So we're just choosing like a, you know, a nice safe route. We say one word, everyone knows what we mean. So I guess we just have to find a different word, Bubba. That's what we have to do.
We need a new safe word. That's what we need.
I love it. So that's our resolution, basically, is to find a new word for value.
We skip ahead to the end. No. That's why I liked the discussion because I'm like, I totally get what Rob's saying. 100% agree. And I'm guilty as all heck about saying value. Probably, I bet you if you listen to the last podcast I did, I probably said it 45 times. Like I do it all the time. I think when I write an article, I write value by 12 times. Like I'm very guilty of it, but it's so hard to put into words without making it kind of a whole different situation.
Right. So. And I think it's a little bit different too. You're doing a podcast, you're talking about hypotheticals, you're looking at ADP, like there's someone's tweeting out their draft that they just got in the NFBC and they're like, I just got a great value on this guy. You could have took the time out to say something different.
Well, at least be like, hey, I expect him to produce here compared to this person producing here. So this is why I like this pick over this pick.
Right. That's it. That's exactly it. And we're just choosing, I guess, you know, quickness.
Shortcut.
Yeah. We're choosing shortcuts.
Yeah. All right. Well, I have a feeling that discussion is going to keep going on for a while. So
yeah,
absolutely. We'll see where that one keeps going. But let's get into some New Year's resolutions here. And this is going to be a lot of fun. We're going to do 5 players each that we kind of have a pros and con resolution on, then a couple of strategy things, and then an overall resolution at the end before we go to listener questions. So I'll let you kick it off as the guest. What is your first player New Year's resolution?
I'm not drafting Zach Plesac. not where he's going. I don't get the love. I think people are throwing out 2019, and I don't know how, and that's like the majority of his sample size. I don't know, just like league and division context first, you know, like the Indians are they've gotten worse and they're continuing to get, you know, worse, it looks like. The Central bats were trash last year, you know, in that short little season we have. 8 out of the bottom 10 teams in OPS. Only the White Sox were in the top 16 in WRC+. Same thing with WOBA. You know, they won 2 games in the playoff. They got smoked. I don't know. It was just like general context starting off without even getting to his skill set. I just don't like it. There's a lot of things there to be wary of. You know, Ron, right out of the forecast, Ron Chandler, you know, the top, according to Rotodollars earned, top 4 were from the Central, and 9 out of the top 16 were from the Central, you know. So I don't know. The swing strike on fastballs, 3% lower than league average. His whiffs per swing is 7% lower than league average. His ball percentage, which another thing in the forecaster, they have a link from ball percentage to like expected walk percentage. And, you know, so his range of 34% balls puts him a little more on that 6-7 percent walk, which is doubled than what he showed in 2020. The CSW in the last 2 years combined is below average. So, I don't know. I heard he's a plug-and-play type of guy, 6th and 7th inning. He's going to work, but he doesn't really do great work in the 6th and 7th inning. You know, in 2019, even, he had 15 innings with a 3.2 K-minus BB, and in 2020, it was 8%. So, it's not like he's getting to those innings and thriving. So, maybe that'll get cut off. And this one is just a hat tip to our guy, Toby. You know, can't do a show without mentioning Toby, but you know, he brought up that 3-2 count stuff on Bauer, and it was pretty cool. You know, I did a little bunch of diving on it, and you know, he overperformed in that regard too, like Bauer did. So, you know, even going back to 2000, you know, K-minus BB percentage and full count, you're looking at Sale and Maddux at the top. You know, 9.5%, Maddux 8%, and Plesac was at 43% last year. So, unless you think he's Maddux or Sale, I think that goes back down to like, you know, 2 or 3%, like the league average, and or maybe even a little higher, but it still takes away a lot of his Ks. And something I think also ties into that, I heard Alex Fast bring this up, but he had 6 pitches that were balls outside of the zone that got called 3rd strikes for strikeouts. So 6 strikeouts that were questionable, along with the full count stuff. I don't know, just overall, when I look at all of that, I see regression and, you know, and a walk tick. I know some people argue like maybe his great command caused that, you know, to him to overperform it. But the same argument could be made that that luck led to the great, you know, ratios, right? So that's what I'm looking at. That's why I really don't trust him at that ADP.
There's the part that gets me is the ADP.
I
did the diving on the last podcast. I keep looking at his stats. I agree with everything you said, because what you just argued there is how I argued Shane Bieber in the past. Mm-hmm. He lives on the corners. He gets these extra strikes. His command is elite. That helps him do this, that, and the other. And if he slips up, it's going to be just bad. Like, it's not going to go well. Plesac's the same thing to me, except Plesac's velocity went down this past year, which is a little concerning as well. Right. But, like, you dig into his – with Plesac, to me, it's he's very good. His command's very good. If he adjusts his pitch mix a little bit, he could be really, really good. Like, if he stops using the fastball so much and goes more slider, change of curveball, those 3 pitches are very, very good. It's just a matter – he still throws that fastball a ton, and it's not that great. So right. That's where I get my confusion with him. I still think he's going to be a very good pitcher, and I wouldn't be shocked if he has a good season. But the part that I'm with you on is I won't draft him pretty much anywhere because at pick 56, we just talked about Blake Snell going five picks earlier. You have Lance Lynn going behind him. You have Sonny Gray, who I love. You have Carlos Carrasco. Like, all these guys I'd rather take. The question for you is you have Zach Plesac at pick 57, the other hot button name, Corbin Burnes, at 55, and Burnes is a big question mark with innings. If you had to take one or the other, which one would you take?
I'm taking Burnes by far.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. I have Plesac as like SP35.
Ooh, God, Dave McDonald must love you. All right. my first resolution. This one is two players that I'm gonna be very overweight on because what I project them to be this season is much better than their draft price at the moment.
I like it.
Tommy Pham and Andrew McCutchen are two outfielders I'm gonna have a lot of come draft season, especially Andrew McCutchen. Both these guys are just going way too late. Obviously, these are November, December drafts. So we have a ton of, McCutchen picked 201 to me is lunacy. And then you have Pham at 120. That's getting more reasonable. It keeps creeping up. So that's going to be interesting. But if McCutchen stays where he's getting drafted, leading off for the Phillies, a guy that's got the chance to produce potentially 20-plus home runs. We've seen it with Cutch before. He's going to swipe bags, maybe 15-plus. He's slowing down in that regard a bit, but still maybe it's 10. Like Steamer's got 26 and 9 with a 246. I think the average is low. They're lowballing him there. But he's going to help you in all five categories, close to pick 200. He's going to be a guy I got circled quite a bit. Tommy Pham I love as well. So between both of those guys, I'm going to have at least one of them probably on every team I have, if not both, as just stable outfield sources that I just put in my lineup and walk away. So I'm a big fan of those two.
I like those choices a lot. Yeah, absolutely. Like you said, the stable choices, I think Pham, he's interesting. Like he's just, I don't know. Our thoughts change so quickly in such a short year, So, be wary of like where did he end up last year, like in the 70s and 80s by main event season, I'm with you there. Those are great choices.
All right. What's your second resolution?
To get as much Kyle Tucker as I can. He's super high on my BABS board and my Mayberry method rankings. I just love his all-around skill set. He's, so toolsy already. And but besides the, you get the power speed, I got the aggregate of HQs and Masters ball and Steamers at 29, 22. I like that. But he doesn't. He hits all pitch types well. That's what I marveled at when I looked at his page. He's hitting every single type of pitch with, not struggling with any portion of the plate. He didn't have a negative run value for any part of the plate, the hard to shatter, the chase, the weight. I just see a very professional hitter already that I think will only get better. And, yeah, possible, Would you be surprised if he did 20-20? Only? Yeah. But would you be also surprised? No, but would you also be surprised if he did 35-35? No, that range of outcomes excites me. And I think he's going to be more toward, that top end. So yeah. Give me some Kyle Tucker this year.
Yeah. He's a very, very fun conversation to have because he's going high in draft. The talent level's insane. Should finally have the playing time. So it'll be very interesting to see how that one comes into play. My next one, and it's going to make a few people angry, but as a Giants fan, I'm going to say it. I am not going to overdraft Kevin Gausman. I love Kevin Gausman. What he did last year was phenomenal. He's not pick 118 worthy for me. If you believe what you saw last year is what he's going to be, awesome. But we haven't seen that pretty much. It's like a little bit in 18, a little bit in 16, but for the most part, we've seen something a little higher. And the Steamer projections love him, which is very interesting as well. We know he's made the pitch mix changes, using the splitter more and all that jazz, which is great. But he's still, for the most part, a four-seam fastball and not a cutter so much, but a two-seamer. Those are his main pitches still if you go off of the pitch leaderboard. The split finger is the one. It went up to 42% usage. It was pretty awesome, obviously, but the splitter is the one that can disappear the fastest as well. It's the one that's hard to control. I think he's a really good pitcher, but pick 118, Pablo Lopez right before him. You have Charlie Morton. You know, Lance McCullers, love him or hate him, he's around there. There's a bunch of guys that I think I'll be taking the chance on. The price for Kevin Gausman in drafts right now is, for a guy, like I said, I'm not risk averse, he brings risk to the table. So you better have a stable core coming into it. So I will not overdraft Kevin Gausman this year.
That's a good resolution, Bubba. Especially that involves your own team. You know, it's
well, I like it. Works. He pitches well. I get to enjoy it in real life. So it works out.
Absolutely.
What's your third resolution?
My third resolution is to attempt a team build with Mondesi. So, you know, obviously, you don't have to go through the discussions everyone, you know, always talking about with him. It's just more of the strategy thing when I think about how to handle a guy like Mondesi. And what I think that people do wrong when they draft him is they stop drafting steals. And I actually think you should, you know, not like actually, you know, keep compensating, like keep targeting it, because if you want to bake in his, you know, oh, you think he's going to drop in the lineup, or, you know, you're going to miss some game from soft tissue injuries. Well, if you're going to bake that in and you're anticipating losing him for some time, why not just back your team up with some more steals so you could just keep pace while he's out? And then if he doesn't, you know, lose any time, or he has that season that you're wishing for, he could, you know, talk about returning value at the end of the year. He could very well be a first round guy. So I just want to attempt a build with him. So, yeah, I think it'll be fun. So it's all about crafting, you know, like really knowing what you want to do before, and that's it.
Yeah. The biggest thing, like you said, is when you enter that draft room, know exactly what you want to do, because you have to be able to bob and weave. And I love the point you made is basically when you draft him, go and just destroy the stolen base competition. Just go and take it all and see how it goes from there. So I like that call quite a bit.
I really would love to start off with like him and Tucker in the second, third, like in the beginning of the draft season. It was like we were able to do it. Now it's getting like looking at ADP, it looks like a little harder to tackle. Like I was looking at like going Cole first, you know, and then just doing the Wheeler, the Tucker Mondesi type of, you know, and I was like, wow, I'm like, maybe that could be like a really interesting type of build, you know. So
no doubt about it.
Yeah.
I'm going to give you two stat lines. In 2020, this player hit .289 with 16 homers, 33 runs, 34 RBIs, and 6 stolen bases. His teammate hit .308 with 11 homers, 28 runs, 33 RBIs, and 3 stolen bases. Pretty close. Not great, like a little less on home runs. If you look at Steamer now, player A, the first one mentioned, projected at .240 with 30 homers, 77 runs, 86 RBIs, and 9 steals, where player B, .271, 29, 79, 90, and 8. So projected to be better than player A. Do you know who these two players are? They're teammates.
Man, they're teammates. Are they on the White Sox?
No.
Braves?
Baby Blue Jays. I'll give you that much.
Baby Blue Jays. Okay, so you're talking about Teoscar and Gurriel?
Yes.
Okay.
And yes. I am my third resolution. Lourdes Gurriel should be drafted ahead of Teoscar and will perform better than Teoscar in 2022.
I love it. I love it.
Not all projections are 100%, but we saw what they did last year. And my biggest takeaway, and I am a gigantic Teoscar fan, he's not hitting .289. He's more of a .250 hitter. Where Gurriel, his lowest he's ever hit was .277. Like, he's going to hit you for an average. They both have a lot of pop. They're both going to steal bases. A lot of similarities. That offense is going to be very good. So there's going to be some weeks where Gurriel drives them all in, and other weeks Hernandez drives them all in. I think you're going to have more Hernandez slumps than Gurriel slumps. So on a week-to-week situation, Gurriel, I almost feel more comfortable as plugging in and going with. And the last thing I'll mention here is the gap has shrunk. I'll put it this way. But Teoscar picked 73, Gurriel 81, 20th and 22nd outfielder. It used to be a much wider gap. So that gap is starting to shrink. I looked at the ADP for the first time now when I made the resolution. That was, I didn't look at the ADP. This was a lot closer than I thought it was going to be. But I'm going Gurriel over Teoscar, which is probably not what majority of Twitter will agree with. But that's one thing. My resolution is don't reach for Teoscar. Take something else with that pick. Get Gurriel the pick after, or reach for Gurriel. One of those two things.
I like that, Bubba. I really do, because like I'm looking at his – on my Babs sheet for displayed skill set last year, just last year, and he's there with Machado, Jose Ramirez, and Eloy. So yeah, I like it.
And he's only 27, so enjoy that.
Yeah, I like that. Good point.
All right. Who's your number? What's your fourth resolution?
Oh, okay. So, similar as to Mondesi, I want to dip my toe in the water with a share of Vlad Jr., Vladito. Again, you know, we know the arguments for and against him. Again, I think this is all about how you like to draft your team, you know. And I think that if I could really nail my first two, you know, or my first four picks, like two pitchers, two batters, like take an upside play with him. Because, you know, like one thing I like to do is I go through finding something long for everyone at either a position or like a specific run of ADP. And when I did that for first base, his like quote unquote needs more lift. Didn't stand out as bad as the other guys, you know, pessimistic view. So when I looked at it in that way, I'm like, well, nobody else is really perfect either. So, and if he does, you know, it's just loft, you know, we're just looking for loft. And the best play is probably to wait one more year, at least, and just get a look if he can do it. But, you know, them doing league, they just, I like to, you know, spread my portfolio a little bit. And he's like not a guy that I've had yet in like last 2 years and this year. And I just feel like I want to dip my toe in. I want to try because, you know, obviously he had that league winning, you know, upside that we all want. So yeah, I'm going to try going against my smarter instincts and saying, you know, don't do it yet, but I'm just going to fight it. I'm going to fight that one.
I don't hate it because he's got the plate discipline to, at worst, get on base, score some runs. He's got great hit tools. That's never been the issue. It's the elevation, like you mentioned, which is weird because when he does elevate it, it goes a long, long ways. Right. So it's just a matter of tweaking it. And you mentioned it. He's, if you're in an overall, this guy could win you the whole thing. Mm-hmm. Like if he clicks, he might not. But that's the kind of gambles you have to take. Like do you take a gamble on Vladito at that point with his upside, or do you wait like till around 18 to take the gamble? Like the difference in the production is not the same. So right. Take your gamble early, get your safer plays later type situation. Mm-hmm. I totally get it. Like if it's a standalone league, maybe not, but in an overall, I can support it 100% because I think the ceiling for a Vlad, when he starts to get going, you're talking like, and people know him much better than me, but just from what I've seen, I know the talent level. And if you want to try to compare it to his father, which people say sometimes that he hits better than his dad, I don't know, but you got to imagine 35 plus home runs. Right. And he's in that lineup, and they're going to be playing in Buffalo again this year. Right. And we saw what that ballpark did.
We saw it, right? Absolutely. Absolutely. Like, and you know what? When I had Ryan Bloomfield on my pod, he made a great point, and it sticks with me. Every time I look at Vlad, you know, he said, you know, it's harder to teach a guy to smash the ball as hard as he does than to teach a guy to lift it, you know? And so he has the one part that's harder, you know, to do. So, and that's ingrained in me. Thank you, Bloomfield and the Bloom boards. But, you know, and I guess it's just like a common theme. My last two is like, you know, my resolution is to just be like maybe a little less risk averse and try to go a little more upside play.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. And that's one thing I try to tell myself, and that'll be in one of my resolutions coming up here, is as boring and as steady Eddie as I like to be, is sometimes, you know, you got to look at things and realize tweaks happen. Do you want to be ahead of that curve or do you not? Like we mentioned with Kim coming overseas, I'll wait. But a guy like Vlad, we've seen in a couple of years, you know how close he is. He's putting in the time. Like he was willing to go play in the Dominican League or Venezuela, I'm sorry, Puerto Rican League or one of the ones down there, which he didn't need to do. Like right. He's got an established position. Like he did not need to be there, and he was there. So that just tells you kind of where he's at in this whole thing, that he's really trying to figure it out.
Right, and I think that's a big thing to take into context. You know, you see the weight, you know, come off. You see that. So maybe Papa got in his ear, you know, and said, "Hey, buddy, yeah, you want to be great? It's time to smarten up." You know, and sometimes, okay, you're right. You know, like he got this far just on raw talent, skill, you know, and talent, and plus, you know, that dual eligibility. If he goes back to third, he'll get that third back, right? So first and third. I'm saying so. Yeah, go on, Vladito.
Don't hate it at all. You're going to start twisting my arm, it seems like. Because I tell myself no, and then my next resolution will kind of go that route is, if you don't get one of the big first basemen early, and I'll throw Vlad in there to be nice. But that position, like there's that middle area of like the top 10, a lot of volatility in there. Right. Like the Voits and the Alonzos and the Olsons, a lot of upside, a lot of ceiling, a lot of volatility. I think this is one of those years where I've kind of avoided them in recent years, but the boring Anthony Rizzos and Paul Goldschmidt's the world going about pick 100 is they're just so boring to pick. They just, it's like watching paint dry. But you look at their end of season numbers and it's just like, yeah, they were a top 10 first baseman. And now I'm getting them outside pick 100. These are guys I used to pick early in drafts. I don't have any of them on my rosters at the moment because when I go to take them, someone else jumps ahead of me there. But it's one of those, like, both teams, Rizzo, the back issues always concern me. But I think as a whole, that Cubs offense was so bad last year, they can't all be that bad again. They just can't. And then the Cardinals with the COVID situation and everything, I'm going to give that just a complete – their schedule is just a disaster. So I think you're getting – interesting prices on Goldie and Rizzo that I'm going to try to convince myself to not be as bullish on them and be willing to roster them a little more than I had in previous years.
And you know what? I think it's the smart play. You know, you see Dom Smith and Monty and, you know, the guys around them. And I don't know. I find myself, I did a DC in the beginning of November and it was one of like an early one and I got Goldschmidt in the 120s and I was super ecstatic and I ended up getting Santana in the 400.
The Santana price is just
and that was like first thing when he was still a free agent. So he's
still 281 in the month of December. That's ridiculous. Wow. He's going after Andrew Vaughn who doesn't have a job at the moment.
Doesn't have a job. It's pretty wild. It's really crazy, right? But yeah, no, I love that because even in the best balls, I think in the three best balls I've done, I've gotten either Rizzo or Goldie. So that's the way I'm going with first base right now. It seems to be where I like to fall. I see those guys where they're going 100. You know, I think I've gotten them each time in the 100s. And the best ball, they went a little higher because I just wanted to make sure I got first base. And but they were my targets, you know, when I wanted to go first.
Yep, I'm with you there. What is your fifth player resolution?
This is going back to our Darvish talk, and this is – Mr. Giolito, I want him on my fantasy team this year for sure. That zone contact, you know, that's the one that draws me in. I think that's the biggest driver of me targeting him. He throws it in there and they're not doing anything with it. Three pitches with CSW is over 32%. He's a stud. So I want to be brave enough to, you know, maybe when I get up to those March drafts to take him at the end of the first round.
Yep.
He's
close. He's picked 20 or he's gone as high as 15.
So someone went there already once. So yeah. He'll probably end up there though, right? I guess that's the one.
No, he's gonna creep in there. Like Toby was saying, he wouldn't be shocked if like seven or eight guys enter the first round by March.
Oh my God!
Yeah,
let's do the main now.
All the bats that start falling.
Yeah.
Trevor Story middle around two, like Jesus.
Oh yeah, please sign me up.
So mine kind of goes in the Giolito vein because you had Giolito, so I didn't want to go just straight Giolito. But people, if they listen to the last podcast, episode 330, you know exactly what I feel on Giolito, and like he's the guy that if you had to pick one guy to jump into the top three. It's him. I think he could be number one. I think he's that good. So I like Giolito a ton. So I want to draft Giolito. But what I'll say in a roundabout way is I want my goal. Like I've talked about in a lot of places, I want at least three pitchers in the first five rounds. That's one thing I really, really want to do because I feel like as much as I like to wade in the middle of the starting pitcher world, it's really, really murky. So I want like three guys I can trust week in and week out. You're in my lineup. I don't have to worry about you. You're in. But to make it a finer point, I want to make sure I get at least one of the big three, Cole DeGrom, Bieber, Giolito, or Luis Castillo. I want one of those five to be my ace every go-around. So that'll be my resolution. I want to make sure I leave every draft at least one of those big five for me.
Right. And not just say, oh, but Jose Ramirez was right there. Yeah. No, I know. It's tough. It's tough because I've always been a bat guy first. And
so am I. I can tell about 3 years ago, like I would never take a picture like before like round seven or something. I thought it was crazy talk, but
that's where the profit potential is laying right now, though. It's grabbing those guys early because of the way the ADP is falling, you know. So it's definitely a good strategy.
All right, now we're going to do three resolutions, like three goals or changes to our strategies, the way we play fantasy baseball as fantasy baseball players. We're going to do three resolutions. So go with your first one. For this is all about you. It doesn't be player-based, whatever. What's your first one?
Oh, my first goal is to win the main event that I get into this year.
Always a good goal.
Yeah. So last year, it was my first go around, and it was a learning experience, an expensive one, but it was great. I know what I need to get better. So, I really want to get into it and do it, you know?
Well, that's one of the kudos I want to give you, because you've opened my eyes to a lot of things, because you're very open and honest about your performances, which I think everybody needs to be, but not everybody is. Right. And you flat out, like, you barely ever talk about winning the DC unless someone asks you. You almost always talk about how you got smoked in a main event and what you've learned from that. And right. I think that's so important to, you know, we can always do fun, good things and be successful at certain things, but unless you learn from what you did wrong, I know this is very cliche, you're never going to get better. And you talk about it so much. And I think it's really interesting, because it's not like you were in a $10 best ball. Like, you were in a main event where you had to pony up some cash. Yeah. And you're like, you know what? It is what it is. It might have been the best investment I ever made, type thing. Like, we're gonna move on from that. I think that's very important for people to listen to, because I don't play the high stakes stuff. So I'm not there. I live vicariously through many of you. And when I hear you guys talk about it, most guys, it's like, you watch them on Twitter, they're living and dying with cashing. Where you like, we're like, okay, well, we're going to do this. I learned this. I'm going to do better here. I'm like, wow. Like, you didn't even like sulk for a while. You're just like, okay, we're moving on. This is what we got going. I'm like, that's big. So I want to give you kudos there. Then the other question I was going to ask you earlier in the pod, but I want to wait till now, because you mentioned you're going to be in the main event. How many main events, how many draft champions do you plan on doing, since you were the overall draft champions winner last year? You have a little extra bankroll probably in your NFBC account. What are you planning on going with your play exposure this year?
I'm still going to only do one main event because I want to focus in on it. I don't want to get spread too thin.
I like that.
I feel like I had that last year with general home leagues. And I was in a little over my head sometimes with Fab. And I just want to make sure that I can, you know, give my all to one league and get better at that. So I'm going to stick to the one main. I just bought a 3-pack of, draft champions, the 151s. I'm not going crazy, you know, because, I haven't worked in a year either. So that's, it kind of offset the, me winning. So, not going to go nuts, just going to keep it respectable again, you know, like probably 3 to 5 DCs. I see myself doing it, probably 2 or 3 more of those, the best balls, you know, and maybe, a couple of the $10 ones with the industry guys, because that's fun. And I actually just, we're doing the Battle of the Podcast League. And Matty Wood just started a standalone NFBC league, but you had to have teammates. Yeah, you have to have a partner. And that was pretty cool. It was a highlight of my day when Jenny Butler, DM'd me, asking me if I wanted to play. And I was like, yeah, hell yeah, Jenny, let's do it. So I'm super excited. And just like, I got about 2 or 3 dynasty leagues and 1 home keeper league. And that's it. You know, it's a lot. But not going to go super crazy with the mains. You know, I just want to concentrate on one and win it.
No, and you said it well, because that's one reason why I keep doing these industry leagues. A, because I like to draft. B, I like to get more people in them. And C, they're best ball, so I don't have to worry about Fab later. Right. Like, we can still have fun. We can still do our thing. Right. Draft champions, the same. I'm doing the NFBC 50s, similar stuff. Like, when it comes down to Fab, it's so time consuming. If you want to do it right, you can't have a ton unless, like, I know I keep bringing Toby up, but he talks about it. The dude is like a zombie come Sunday afternoon. We used to do Sunday night shows, and I'm usually tired on Sundays, but he's exhausted because Saturday night he stays up to like 3 or 4 in the morning doing Fab. Like, that's just, I can't do that. So, like, I give him power, he can do it, but I can't do it. So, I try to limit the deal there. So I'm glad you said that. I think I won't give away all the teams that are in the one Maddie's putting together, but I think it's cool. Like, you and Jenny, like, it's unique combos. It's not just like exclusive to like big names in the industry. Yeah. I think it's really cool seeing like the other one I'll mention. I won't mention them all, but like Justin Mason's going to team up with Shelly V. I think that's awesome.
Right.
Like there's some really cool combos that I love how certain things in the industry don't seclude everybody.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And totally. So I'm a big fantasy and stuff like that.
Yeah, me too. I'm excited about that. It's so cool.
Okay. My first one, and it's kind of, you picked the main. I picked a different route. I was going to start doing it last year, then the pandemic hit, so I did not continue on, but it was a big topic of conversation before last season when I was talking on Twitter and people think I hated the NFBC, and that was not it at all. It was about the price points for a lot of the average player can't play in these tournaments.
Right.
So I use the argument that if you think you're good enough, we can build bankrolls. So it's kind of like a bankroll challenge. So I was going to do anywhere from 3 to 5, like RotoWire qualifiers that are $50 each and stuff like that, like to kind of show how can we build our bankroll to move up the levels, because that was the argument everybody made. So my goal is I'm going to enter 5-ish, maybe a couple more of those RotoWire qualifiers. And my goal is to win at least 2 of them. And awesome. So I'm that's the thing, is I'm going to try to limit to those. And then I'll have like a couple other fab leagues. So those will be my exclusive like fab leagues. And then, and part of me thinks, okay, I can go spend, a few $100 doing that instead of thing one big thing. That's kind of my mindset. But my goal is to show people we can do this. And that's kind of how I want to go about it. So my goal is to win at least 2 of the qualifiers. That's my goal this year.
That's awesome. That's awesome. I like that. And I like that, just showing people that there's different ways to get to where, you want to play. And, things like people with DMing me that weren't really knew about the NFC, and I didn't, this is my first year. Well, I did a second chance league in 2019, but 2020 was my first full season playing NFBC. It took me a while to get to there too, but it was just, did it at home, it was just, winning leagues at home and just getting on a bankroll. And if it wasn't going on vacation with the wife, it was, I told her it was a goal of mine, last year. It's like, when I win one of the home leagues, I want to play this league, this main event league, I want to play against the best. And so, that was my goal. And like you said, it's great because you can show people like, hey, you don't have to just go there immediately, have a firm place, a firm step in hand, and get there. I like that.
And you get comfortable with the formats and all that stuff before you're just jumping into the shark infested waters.
That's huge. Right.
Yeah. All right. What's your number 2?
Oh, so my number 2 is I just want to become more well-versed on like valuation systems, to hear Toby and Phil talk about the SGP and, reading the process, talking about the Z-score methods and things about that. And I never really dabbled with, like spreadsheets and stuff like that, union carpenters don't really fuck with that stuff. So, so now that I'm learning stuff and I'm like, oh, wow, this is cool. Like what, and not to say I'm just going to totally use it, but I just want to, know about it. I want to know what, what everything, means and how other people approach, valuing players. Cause I think it's pretty cool how sometimes, I'll talk to plenty of people and they'll talk about a player and it's like, wow, you do things so differently than I do, but we feel the same way about a player, And I marvel at that because it's pretty cool how we can get to the same decision on a person with having different routes to get there. So that's my goal. I want to learn, SGP, and, really understand it and, maybe try to incorporate it anywhere I can to help me, because I think part of winning a main event is like I want to know what other people how other people draft too. So if I could notice a trend of the way guys drafted or evaluation system he may be using, maybe I can use it to my advantage. So that's my second goal.
Yeah, my second's very similar to that. I don't know if I'll get to it this year, but I want to keep working towards it. I want to be able to make my own projections, but a lot of that involves Excel work and stuff that I'm very stupid with. So I want to be able to do stuff like that so I can use what's in my head of how I'm looking at this player and talking about this player and actually show it to people. Like, these are why I feel this way about them, instead of just reading Steamer, which they're really solid and they're good for a reason. So that's why I use them. But I want to be able to come up with maybe not like ATC projections, but use something that I can make work. And I might just do go with the smart fantasy one and go check out all that stuff. I don't know. But I want to be able to do something kind of more customizable to my thought process, my draft process. Maybe when I do that, then there's guys that stand out or don't stand out that I need to go look at more. Stuff along those lines. And I want to be able to do that. And people say, even Phil talks about it, it's super simple with Excel. And when I was in college, and I knew it very well. College was a long time ago. So I need to get back into that. But I'd love to be able to get closer to doing like my own projections instead of the joke I make on the show that I'll give you caveman projections and we'll go from there. So that's one. That's my number two.
And that's you know, it's funny you mentioned Phil. Like, he's great. Phil's awesome. Like, and you know, when he tells me the same thing you say, like, he just wants to be able to know that it's his valuation, it's his, you know, outlook on things. And you know, sometimes when you just hear someone explain something a certain way, like you just did too, it really rings true, right? It's like, wow, like, you know, I'm drafting off of what other people like think. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I want to do what I want to think, you know, like how I think. And that's awesome. That's great. I would, that's an awesome goal, Bubba. That's it's still going to be labeled caveman projections though, right?
But of course.
Yes.
Of
course. Awesome.
Yeah.
Or something. I think that's such a big sell. Yeah. That's a t-shirt. That's everything.
It's a niche department. No one's really gone caveman. Like, it'll be great.
Yeah. Absolutely. Awesome. What's
your number three?
So I want to try to so I was just reading the forecaster and just looking at starting pitching, relief pitching landscape in general the last 4 or 5 years. Been such a shift in the amount of innings. The starters are throwing and the relievers are throwing. And I think when you have shifts in like league landscape like that, you kind of have an opportunity maybe to find the next, you know, way to draft a team, a next team build, like a pocket aces per se, but not pocket aces, you know. So I want to just attempt to, you know, implement and execute that next strategy. Like, I know it's a daunting task, but like I said, I think it helps when landscape changes. You know, it's like when something changes, like baseball's changing now, like you might be able to find something that may be able to work. You know, maybe it's like hybrid strategy of pitchers and, you know, 2 or 3 inning pitchers like, you know, Freddy Peralta's and Luis Patino's. Like, who knows? Like, well, whatever you find your way to do. So that's what I'm going to try to do. I want to try to come up with something really, you know, it's going to take a lot of work and a lot of vision, but I'm going to try it. You know, something crazy. I like
it. I'm looking forward to it because there's pocket aces. I've heard the term full house for this year. Which is kind of what in a roundabout way, that's what I'm trying to do. I didn't realize that's what it is, but that's what people are doing. I know guys in your vein of the kind of the Seth Lugo's of the world and stuff, get Franken aces, put like two of those guys together to create an ace. That's more of a daily moves league. So how do you do it in a PC league? I'm with you. It'd be fun right. to find the next one for sure.
Would you say Franken aces? Sorry.
Franken ace, like Frankenstein, oh, Franken, but yeah. you create an ace by using like two pitchers, like nice. Like a Seth Lugo, and when he was like a 2 or 3 inning guy with someone else, create a Franken ace.
Interesting. I like it. Yeah. I never heard that before. Where have I been?
Yeah, no, it's all good. It's my last one, and it's one I could probably put on every season because I need to get better and better at it. I want to be better with Fab. I really can't expand too much more than that. It's just I need to be more efficient with it. I need to be – I talk about it as, you know, don't just put in one move for a guy. That if you don't win that bid, he's still on your roster. Put in 12 moves so at least you get someone that you might be willing to use that week instead of like there's a lot of the Fab process I really need to figure out that I need to continue to get better at. So Fab is a big one that I'm pretty sure it's going to be on my list for quite a while.
That's great. Actually, you know what? I'm like kind of mad I didn't pick that one too. Because looking back, I'm like, yeah, that just hearing you say it now, like, yeah, I had a ton of work to do in that too, especially with that backup. And you know, and like you say, know how the league site works. You know, that's why I think that little brief intro I did to the NFBC in a second chance league in 2019 helped me. I felt like I was a ton behind. Like I was learning on the fly because this. But definitely understand and know how to do that. It's not easy, and I think that and this is what I learned in the main event. Like it was sometimes I was looking at some of the batters going for like a buck or two, and I'm like, what are these guys gonna do this week? And those were the guys that were, you know. So I'm missing something there that I want to like, you know, reevaluate in my head. Like how are these specific $1 or $2 bids always outperforming the ones going for 112, you know? So yeah, stuff like that. Awesome, Bubba.
All right. The last resolution we have, what is one resolution that you want for yourself as a member of the fantasy community?
Oh, well, you know, I just want to promise myself and my supporters that I want to get better, you know, as a podcaster, as an analyst, as a fantasy player. You know, I just want, I want to become better at everything, better friend, a better person, all that fun stuff. You're just trying to better myself all the time. And just having met so many people now and, you know, networking out is pretty cool. So I just want to really reinforce all those, you know, all the new friendships I made. I just want to really have like a nice, you know, community. And so that's, and also for like a full baseball thing too, to incorporate more, like, I really want to try to get into the, like the science of baseball, like the swing path stuff, you know, the seam wake shift that I'm reading about now. I'm like, oh my God, what is this stuff? Is it going to so help me? It, you know, crazy. So like, that's the thing is like, and so, you know, I know like the whole age of information, like it just explodes at you. And it's just like the StatCast stuff too. So maybe if this stuff is going to be the next thing, like the point of contact, stuff like that, like I want to understand the verbiage now. So when we're starting to like throw around stats, I'm like, oh, okay. I know what that means, you know? So it's like when you first like, you know, get into analytics and you read about WOBA and like, you know, you want to, you have to know what it means, you know, to really use it as a, as an evaluation. So yeah, I want to learn anything I can that in the scientific world and see if I can apply it into fantasy. Cause I know it could help me in baseball, just watching baseball, like, you know, but you know, hopefully maybe find a way to apply it to winning fantasy.
No, I'm with you there. So yeah, we're pretty similar. Obviously I want to get better at the growing the podcast. I want to be better at writing. And that's a goal I've had for like 3 straight years, and I'm writing more and more every year. So that's something I want to do. Cause if you think my caveman projections are funny, you should have saw some of my first articles. Those were entertaining. but I think if I had to pick one thing I really want to do better, and I mentioned it during the pandemic, I've done a little bit of it, but I'd like to do more. I want to get better at video content because I think that's definitely kind of a wave of the future type. That's where everything's going, it feels like. You're either podcasting or you're doing a video, like a vlog or something. I'd like to do better at being able to like edit videos and use graphics and stuff along those lines. Right. That's one thing I really want to do this year.
That would be, yeah, that's cool. That's a good goal. That's something I think, and you're right. That's the thing. That's the next wave of attracting, you know, a crowd and just really getting out like content in a different way, you know, cause some people just absorb things better too, you know, visually. Yep. So yeah, that's awesome, Bubba. I love it.
Yeah, for some reason, people like I've always had a face for radio, but people actually want to see it for some reason, and I don't get it. But to each their own. Let's do some listener questions here. Our buddy David Mendelson from Triple Play Fantasy, he asks, "What is it like winning that much money like you did in fantasy baseball? If I could win a sum like that, my fiance might actually think the amount of time I spend in this world would be worth it."
That's funny. D Mendelson. I love Dave. He's a, yeah. So it's funny. He mentioned the fiance, you know, being more acceptive of that, you know, it's like, it definitely helps, you know, like,
it does not hurt.
it did not hurt, but you know, I'm lucky. I'm grateful. I had a wife who pushed me, you know, to try my hand in these things and not like say, hey, you know, what are you doing? So she realized I love it. And so anyway, it was a crazy feeling, you know, it was, I still can't really describe it, you know. It was amazing, and it was also a complete shock, you know. I was saying before, like, just for general context, like, the end of 2019 sucked for, like, my whole family and me. So the way that it led to that, the podcast, and then winning that, it was just, like, that was what, like, really took me over, like, took my body over, like, wow, like, this just happened like that, you know, like it's like a fairy tale fucking story, excuse my language, but you know, it's like, it really was. And it was funny. I never forget it because I sat there staring at the screen. Bloomfield tweets me out, "Hey, congrats." And I'm like, "Is it over?" And he's like, "Yeah." And I'm like, "How do you know?" And, like, they didn't call me. it was pretty wild. You know, I was just so stuck. And I never forget the red zone was on in the background for hours. You know, when it ended, it plays the music. Oh, yeah. It was on. It was on my TV until 10 o'clock, 10:30. Awesome. As I stared at my computer, just like, you know, it was awesome. You know, I was frozen. And but you know what's crazy? And this kind of like bugged me out. Like, it's like, what's, you know, what's going on in my head right now? It's like, it's I have the Mamba mentality on my coffee table. And every day, like, I read a page or two just to get some, like, you know, a little motivation, a little Kobe motivation. And one of the things that, like, really got me was, like, he said, like, one time when they won the championship, he didn't feel like celebrating. He shot bad from the free throw line that game and wanted to go work on free throws, right? And in my head, like, as the clock is ticking and I'm winning, I'm thinking in my head, like, how do I get better next year? You know, like, that was already on my mind. So, like, and I had to, like, refocus. My wife was like, can you just, like, enjoy it a little? Because I told her how I was feeling. And she's like, what are you nuts? I'm like, nah, I'm just, you know, I was so overwhelmed by that. So, yeah, it was crazy, man. It was just a wild ride, you know. But I'm grateful it happened.
I understand. When I had my big win in DFS, it was a wild one. So I totally understand. It's a different experience.
Was it baseball, Bubba?
Yeah, MLB. I hit a $4 entry for $50,000.
Oh, sweet, man.
Yeah, I remember watching the last game and then just kind of like sitting there on the couch staring at the TV like, what just happened?
God, that's amazing.
Yeah, I know what you're saying where you're just kind of sitting there like, whoa.
Yeah, it's life changing, you know, and you just don't know how to react, you know. So That's awesome, bro. It's good to hear that. I never knew that. That's awesome.
Yeah, it was about 3-4 years ago, something like that. So yeah, it's pretty sweet. Our buddy Phil Dussault, we've mentioned him a few times. First question he has for you: last year you won the DC by waiting on closers. Who's one sneaky closer going after pick 450 that you think can give you 15 plus saves in 2021?
Ooh, I like this one. Oh man, so this is like, it's funny. When I got into the DC, this was the first like place I went to that I really wanted to break down was closers. And like you mentioned, it's a mess. There's free agents that's gonna sign. Landscapes will change for sure, but you know, you still love to dig in and find that little nugget. And I wrote down like a couple of guys like Wendell Kinn, Joe Jimenez, I still think can get there, but my biggest target. And I know a lot of people, you know, saying that they just got Rafael Montero, but I still think actually Kendall Graveman's going to be the guy. So Montero is ARB eligible in 2022. So I just don't think that a rebuilding team, you know, I'm looking at that context of, you know, are they going to really drive up this guy's worth right now in a rebuilding team? And so when Graveman went to the pen too, his velocity went up like, you know, 2 miles an hour. He had a 3.60 ERA in the pen. Short sample size. But if you read, you know, I dug up some Seattle newspaper articles and the coaches loved him and he seemed to really enjoy being in the pen. And so that's a stab I already took. And I think it's a stab I'll still take late closer wise.
You're like the second or third person that's told me I need to reevaluate Kendall Graveman. So I'm gonna have to look at that because I just have horror stories of beforehand. Right. But yeah, so I need to dig back in there because he had a great price tag right now. Let's put that way. 100%. The other question he asked, and I have a feeling he's part of this answer: who are the all-star guests that are already booked for the Pull Hitter Pod in January and February?
Yeah, Phil knows he's always welcomed on. We always talk about ways to get him on the show. We actually have a pretty cool segment that we're going to start including into like the podcast I do that's going to include Phil, but we're not ready to throw that out there into the world yet. But right now, so I've scheduled some guys for January because one thing I think I'm just trying to be more a little more structured this year and looking ahead, you know. Obviously something I wasn't used to. So just trying to set a specific schedule and at least just try to attempt to give people like a month. And some people, like, I don't know if people respond like, what, this kid nuts? Like, it's a month and a half. Like, but you know, I'm just trying to, like, you know, keep a nice structured thing. So I reached out to, you know, guys like Matt Motika and Todd Zola, they're going to come on, and Steve Braun, Scott Jenstad, Matty Wood. So yeah. And of course, like everyone who I previously had on already, I'd love to get on again as we get closer to, you know, the start of the season. So yeah, that's what nice. I got. Yeah, that's
Mike's
what I
murder, got. Mike Murderer's Row right there. Yeah. Richard Koloski asks, let's play Eno Saris's Would You Rather. So kind of
I love how Eno jumped in. I'm sorry, but I love how he jumped in last night. Like, was this for me?
So who has the better fantasy season and why? No equivocating, and yes, these players have different skill sets. So just, would you rather, corner infield, Yoan Moncada or Paul Goldschmidt?
Goldie.
Javi, at middle infield, Javi Baez or McNeil?
oh, this one I thought this was ended up being my closest one, and I'm always a Javi guy. I'm like a recency buyer, taking advantage of him where he's going right now, but I'm going return dollar value. I think what he's asking for, and I'm going McNeil. I think he's going to shine with accumulating stats and an elite hit tool. So I'm going McNeil.
Better team this year too. Outfield, Bryce Harper or Kyle Tucker? I think I know your answer here.
You know what? But in terms of his question for return dollar, I still think Harper is going to bring back more.
Harper's so underappreciated.
He really is, Bubba. I'm glad you said that because really, you know what? You know what I kind of think he is? I think he's the Mike Trout of the second round. You know, like how Mike Trout is like, it's like, oh, I can't lose a league with Trout. You can't lose with Harper in the second round. So that's my little analogy of him. So I still think in terms of return dollar value, I still think he'll, I think he's going to outpick Tucker by like a dollar or two.
Yeah, I'm with you there because and Harper brings the floor, but his ceiling can be crazy. We've seen that MVP ceiling. Oh, cool, man.
Right.
And then for pitcher, well, he already answered this one. Corbin Burns or Plesac?
Burns. It burns.
It burns. The last question we have here is from my buddy Art from Triple Play Fantasy, a little cheesecake. How are you addressing unsigned players? Are you following rumors, not letting where they may sign affect your drafting? So we mentioned relievers, but there's also a lot of other players and positions that are unsigned. How is that affecting your drafting of these players?
Yeah, that's a great question because I think it's a like a case-by-case guy. For a guy like Carlos Santana, when I was drafting him early in the year, I wasn't really worried about where he was going to end up. I thought he was just going to have a job no matter where he went. I was kind of trying to look at the first couple guys who signed and seeing the amount they were signed for compared to their WAR and just kind of see like – Carlos Santana still has a job. Like he's still going to be a starter first baseman. So I wasn't so worried about him. But I guess guys like Osuna, it makes a big difference on when they're going to go. You know, DJ LeMahieu is way off of. You know, just stay away until he signs with the Yankees. You know, basically. But it's tough because one thing I would say about following the news, minding the news, right, is you just got to be careful about what you're actually believing in, you know, because sometimes we just, all right, so, you know, that's what we want to be on. That gives us a little leverage, a little edge, but, you know, not every manager statement is clear cut, right, Bubba? Like, there's nothing that's ever like, oh, this is what I'm saying, so this is true. So you can really kind of just, you know, it's tough. It's a tough evaluation. So if it's a guy who I think is going to land a job in a park, like not a park affected guy, I'm staying in on him at a reasonable price. But if it's a situation where the player, I'm like, I don't know where he's going to sign or where he might play, then I'll be more reluctant to draft him.
I'm 100% with you. That's why Santana, I agreed I was all about because you knew he was going to get a job and his price was a lot different. Ozuna, you still have to pay a premium for him because of what he did last year and you have no idea where he's going.
Right.
So it's definitely a case by case basis, and I guess if I am really concerned, I'm just going to pass, and it might stink. But that's kind of the part about drafting early. Drafting early, take advantage of some, and you'll get hurt on others. That's just how it's going to work. How do you want to take the approach in the draft? So right now, I probably wait more often than not. But all right, Rob, that'll wrap us up on the episode. Final thoughts, plug away, do all your good stuff.
All right. Well, again, thank you, Bubba. Again, it was amazing just being able to come on the show. Like I said, I really looked up to you since I really started listening to pods. And so I respect the hell out of what you're doing. You can find me at Deadpool Hitter on Twitter. I also have a page for the pod at Pull Hitter Pod. I have the Pull Hitter Podcast. I have a website, pullhitter.com. I don't have tons of articles on there, but again, like you mentioned, I really want to, you know, try to hammer that home this year, writing a couple of articles a week. That's where you can find me. Hit me up. Let's talk about life, you know. Just want to meet nice people who aren't bags of shit and want to talk about good things in the world, you know. That's it. It's not that hard, Bubba.
No, it's not. It really isn't. It's not hard to be a nice person. Yeah. But, check out Rob on Twitter. He's an awesome dude. Awesome dude. Very open to conversation. He's a heck of a fantasy player. So go check out all that good stuff. And thanks for joining me, my friend. We will do it again sometime.
Thank you, Bubba. Yep, absolutely.
All right, everybody.
Enjoy New Year's Eve.
You, everybody. Happy New Year's to you and to all listeners.
Rolling out of 2020 with Bubba. This is great.
2021, hopefully better and bigger and better things to come. Absolutely. But this was Bench with Bubba, episode 331 with Rob DiPietro. Catch you guys next time.
Hey, Drew Scott here.
And I'm Jonathan Scott, reminding you that life's better with a home policy from American Family Insurance. They can help you get just the right protection at just the right price and help you save when you bundle home and auto. Kind of like Goldilocks and the Three Bears. It'll be just right for you. We love a custom build. American Family Insurance. Insure carefully. Dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.